What is up, everybody? Welcome to The Stack. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
And on The Stack, we talk about a bunch of books that have come out this week, and we review them. So let's get into those reviews. But before we do, I want to just make it clear, spoiler warning here for everything that we're going to be talking about. For no particular reason, I guess we'll see what happens when we talk about these books. I also do want to mention, if you want ad-free versions of this podcast and all the podcasts we do, patreon.com/comicbookclub. But ads,
and we're not here to spoil. I wouldn't hesitate to call these spoilers. These are nugs.
Yes, these are celebrations is the way that I would describe them. So let's celebrate our first title. Venom 256 from Marvel, written by Al Ewing, art by Carlos Gomez. This is continuing the death spiral storyline as a new villain named Torment is coming straight for the families of Eddie Brock, Peter Parker, and Mary Jane Watson, a.k.a. Venom, Carnage, and Spider-Man. I think I did that order right. Not 100% sure. Anyway, as we ended last issue, Torment is coming for Dylan Brock. He's not quite ready to take on Eddie Brock yet, because what he does is he spirals in on the family. That's a thing, a concept we all know and understand.
You gotta start on the outside when you're murdering. Before you get to the inside.
Exactly. You got to really like pump yourself up. It's Star Trek rules. It's time travel. You got to do a slingshot maneuver around the murders. Anyway, he comes for Dylan. Paul is protecting him. Things do not turn out so well for everybody concerned. I'll just say before we get into any specific celebrations or anti-celebrations of anything that happened in this issue, I continue to love this crossover. I think it's very intense. I was a little iffy about Torment as a villain, but I think that's working out really well. I love the different personalities from Spider-Man, Venom, and Carnage. It's really tying all of their stories together really nicely. This is great so far. I think this is all very well done and very tense.
I agree. It's very good, and it's rare, especially in a Spider-Man crossover, where the villain gets to take center stage, and it really work, and it feels scary and threatening, and I feel like they've done an amazing job with this to keep moving the pieces around and keeping – Spider-Man's sort of the smallest character in here, really, which I would often feel like that might not work, but it's working really well here, and in descending order, it's sort of like – new character Torment that we don't know anything about, then Carnage, then Venom, and then Spider-Man, which is the reverse order of how things usually go, of characters we're meant to care about or want to be find out what happens.
Well, I think one of the things that really helps, and I know you feel this way as well, but I think it really helps that there's three solid bases for each of these characters individually in their titles. Like, the Eddie Brock Carnage title was canceled by Charles Soule, but that was a really good, solid, very interesting title that had a very different take on Eddie Brock and Carnage. Venom from Al Ewing has been great so far. The Mary Jane thing has been a delightful, fun surprise, and the supporting cast has been really good as well. We've also really been enjoying Joe Kelly's Spider-Man. So when you've got very clear emotional arcs for all three of the main characters, that helps. Like, it should be a no-brainer, but so many of these events start with, like, yeah, we got a big concept, period. Okay, how does this affect people?
Yeah,
but this feels like this started with, okay, we have all of these characters in this place. How do we craft this in a way that this pushes these things forward and pushes them to the edge? And it's coming from that direction. And I think that bears out. We interviewed Joe Kelly recently about this, and I think a lot of what he was saying was about that. He clearly thinks about Spider-Man, and he thinks about what Spider-Man is. So that's all good stuff.
Yes. Now, stuff happens in comics.
It does, yes.
And in this comic, a very specific thing happens that I feel like a lot of people maybe like or would like.
Should we? Okay, I'm going to come out and say it. We've been bouncing around it. You probably all know because it unfortunately leaked earlier this week, or at least part of it leaked earlier this week, and I don't think it was a big page in this issue. Paul, Mary Jane's ex-boyfriend, has been living with and taking care of Dylan, who hates him and constantly roasts him and calls him top-knot and makes fun of all of his habits and everything that he does. But Dylan has constantly been like, nope, I'm there for you. No, excuse me. Paul has been like, I'm there for you, Dylan, I'm there for you. And part of that is his kids were mystical kids that literally disappeared, and it's very complicated. We don't need to worry about it too much, but like, he's emotionally attached to Dylan. In this issue, he sacrificed himself not just to save Dylan, but also to give Spider-Man, Carnage, and Venom enough time to get there to fight back against Torment. So he sacrifices his life to save him, and he pretty definitively dies. Like, as much as a comic book character can die, I'm always very cognizant of, like, oh, there's time travel in this story, so there's an out. Or, like, I was looking for Dylan gets the jackpot device in this issue, and I was like, oh, he probably dropped it by Paul. But nope, he doesn't. He has it in the sewer, so it's not there. There's still ways they could bring Paul back, but, like, people hate Paul, and it seems like they finally killed him off. What's your take on this,
Justin? It was very upsetting, honestly. Yeah. Like, the way that he seemingly actually died, I was like, oh, man, I thought this was going to be just a big injury or something. But it's, and his last words are like, I didn't matter. And which is very harsh. And like, his last couple speeches he has are sort of like, I'm nothing. He's being told he's nothing by Torment. So it's like, it was very upsetting. And I almost feel like if this is Paul's last moment, it felt like sort of a little bit of a clapback on the fans that are calling for Paul to die and be like, look, is this what you want? You want to punish this person who's just trying to be a person and dies a hero? Like, that is, does this make you happy? And I like that as a meta textual choice.
Well, that's, I thought this was extremely well done, and we are definitely two Paul fans on this podcast. I think we were not necessarily Paul fans, but came around because Al Ewing has been putting in the work, and we talked to him about this at New York Comic Con, the idea that making him so hateable in this book and Dylan being like, God, leave me alone. What are you doing? Leave me alone. Stop eating your veggie burgers. Made him slowly more lovable as it went, because he's such a like pathetic sad sack that you can't help but feel for him. And here again, Al Ewing really puts in the work in this issue to be like, this is a sacrifice. He is doing this to save Dylan. And what he emphasizes is like, yeah, I'm nothing. I have no history. I'm nobody, but I care about this kid, and I'm going to do anything to save this kid. And you can't hate that. Like, as a human being, again, your heart goes out to him. You feel for him. It's a sad death. Spider-Man, even as he's swinging off, is like, does it out loud, but he's like, I have complicated feelings because this guy, I came back from an explosion and he was kind of married to Mary Jane, who I still have feelings for, whatever. And instead he's like, he was a human being. And that's what he does. That's also like a rarity in comics is, it's something that Spider-Man crossovers like this do really well, where they have a character where you're like, it's Captain Jean DeWolf, who's like, oh, it's a long-running side character, and they die, and you're like, oh my God, this is awful. Why is this happening? This is so sad. And it works, like, because they are these regular humans in these superhuman situations. And the other part that will make it work is it clearly, at least in this issue, it's going to affect Dylan's storyline. It's going to affect Mary Jane's storyline. It'll probably, because Spider-Man feels guilty about everything all the time, affect Spider-Man's storyline. Eddie might feel like a little less about it because he's about to die by the end of the issue. But again, it comes back to the thing I was saying earlier about like making it matter for the characters. It matters because we do care about Paul at the end here. It is going to impact these characters going forward. It's a death that matters.
Yeah, and it is sort of strange the way it's done, because Paul dies and tells Mary Jane Venom to go get Dylan, and she does. She's not like, no, I'm so sorry, I must stay with you. She literally is like, drop, go.
Right.
Which I was like, oh, damn.
Yeah, them leaving his dead body behind was like, oh, man.
Yeah.
Final kick in the nuts for Paul.
So that was a bummer. I also, like, not that I was affected by Dylan picking up the jackpot thing, but I was like, that's very dangerous.
Yeah, don't do that.
Yeah, the whole thing with that is that's what forced MJ to get into the Venom suit, right?
Didn't it kill her?
She needs Venom or she dies because of the jackpot bracelet. So I don't know, that felt like a big move. There's an even bigger moment, I guess you could say, at the end of the issue. So, like, this is just a big issue. Like, I was, like, hit three times by it.
Yeah, and I think this is a good time to cue up our In Memoriam for Paul montage, so I'll start playing that right now. You guys can fill it in your heads.
Yeah, just imagine the different top knots.
I know people are going to be celebrating online or whatever, but the funny part about it, I think, is as much people are like, I hate Paul because he's standing between Mary Jane and Peter. She's not going to get back with Peter.
No. Are you she's happy gonna you've killed Paul and now she's going to get with Flash Thompson?
Yeah. You dorks. Got you guys. You dorks. Anyway, this crossover is great. This issue is great. And the design for the quote-unquote new character at the end, I thought was very cool as well. So shout out to Carlos Gomez's art. Let's move on and talk about another big issue, Mad About DC, at number one from DC Comics. I only wrote down edited by Chip Zdarsky because this is written and drawn by so many people, too many people to list. Oh, sorry for not listing everybody. But yeah, this is a array of all-star writers and artists taking on DC stuff in the classic Mad style. Justin, what did you think about this one? What was your take on it?
It made me want this just all the time. I want this. Mm-hmm. This could be monthly. And this has worked in comics in the past. I think of What the Marvel comedy book. Mm-hmm. I mean, it didn't run maybe for a decade, right. But it certainly ran for a few years at a time when it was continually brought back. So, like, I like this, and, like, I don't know, like, I guess it's like, well, people don't want to pick up comedy on a regular basis, but I do think there's a world for that when it's done as smartly as this. When you have pages like Guy versus Spy, or Spy mm-hmm. versus Guy, I don't remember which one it was, which is, like, Spy versus Spy with Guy Gardner. Like, there's a lot of, like, just roasts of the DC continuity and that DC characters and comic book fans weirdly targeted. There's a strange thing that goes after that is weirdly political, I felt like. Do you know what I'm talking about, Alex? I'm opening it now. When it comes up, I'll tell you. Like, it's a wild take about, like, different types of comic book heroes as, like, podcasters or, like,
oh yeah, yes, that one was very, like, current and interesting. You know, the thing is, like, there's a thing that it says on the cover that, like, no refunds because humor is subjective. I'm paraphrasing there. And I do think there's part of it that, like, yes, it is. I was certainly analyzing. I haven't read a Mad magazine in years, so I might be off. Some of this actually did feel more like What the or Not Brand X or whatever it was than Mad magazine to me. And for me, being like a comedy stop, I was like, well, this isn't right. This is not Mad magazine. But there was enough of it that did work that I was okay with it and enjoyed it. I mean, to call out a couple of specific things, I do think the Guy versus Spy was great.
Very good.
Was that Mark Russell or?
That wasn't Mark Russell.
That was not Mark Russell. I don't remember who did that one. But that was a very good one. The Scott Snyder Absolute Batman story was definitely not like a Mad magazine thing at all, but that was the one that made me, I think, laugh out loud the second most in the issue.
I love the Absolute Condiment King by the former Nightwing team was awesome.
Yes, Tom Taylor and Bruno Dono. That was very fun.
Yeah.
But the one that I wanted to call out in particular that I think was the most successful to me was Kyle Stark's montage of, like, second tier superheroes.
Yeah.
That he did, which we talked to Kyle Stark's a couple of months back, and he was like, he told us, and this is a little pretentious, but he was like, most people who think they're doing comedy in comics are not actually doing comedy.
Yeah.
And I couldn't stop thinking about that the entire time I was reading this issue, because I won't call out anybody here, but some of the things I was like, eh, that's not really funny. I don't know.
Yeah.
That's not really comedy. But Kyle Stark's thing was very funny. All of his things, he writes and draws all these ridiculous superheroes that did feel like something that could slot right into Mad magazine. I mean, we also got a couple of pages from Sergio Aragonés.
Oh, you're talking about the Kyle Starks you weren't talking about is the Dial H for Hero Fails.
Dial H for Hero. Yes, that's what it was.
The one right before that I also really enjoyed, which was about the death of Robin, when, like, Robin died because over 5,000 people called in to have him die.
Can I throw out something crazy that drove me a little crazy about that? I wish it was a real 800 number that they had set up. It's a fake 800.
You dialed it?
No, like it's a 555, so it's not a real number. But like, man, if they had put in a call to apologize to Jason Todd there, that would have been
great. That's really funny.
Yeah. So I don't know. Like, I had a fun time reading this. It is packed for everything that doesn't hit. There's like two other things that do hit. So I agree with you. I'd like to see more of this. The art's good. The writing is fun. It's fun, and it's like fun to see people skewer themselves, you know?
Definitely. I like the Know Your Kryptonite thing that I believe Chip Zdarsky
yes.
did. Everyone we've talked about who worked on this are like Chip. It's awesome that Chip stepped in to do this and made this happen. So shouts to him as well.
The one that I thought was the smartest was G. Willow Wilson's page where she was breaking down the brains of people. And it was designed by Chip Dzarski. So it looks really good. It's very slick. But like that was the one that I was like, oh, that is a very precise and very smart level of satire on that page.
Yes, though I think it's Rainbow Rowell.
Oh my God, it was Rainbow Rowell? Okay, sorry. I mixed up my writing. Some of my favorite
but writers. Agree that one was very awesome.
Yes. Oopsie doodle. Well,
very fun. Definitely worth checking out. I like the, who did this one? The Mad Guide to Batman's Villain Secret Identities. And it's all just like a funny naming thing. Oh, Ryan North, of course.
Yes.
And Erica Henderson.
That was great.
That one was really fun as well. Just a lot of good stuff. And it's just packed. It's jammed. So like you're saying, like all the humor will hit different parts of different audiences, but there's really something for everyone in there.
Yeah. There you go. And if you want to hear a little bit more about it, we talked to Scotty Young last night, and he contributes a page. So he talks about how much Mad Magazine has meant to him. So and listen to that. Next up, Daredevil number one from Marvel, written by Stephanie Phillips, art by Lee Garbett. This is a kickoff of the next big run on Daredevil. Matt is now a law professor, teaching at where else? Empire State University. And meanwhile, he's still doing his Daredevil thing at night, but there's a new enemy who is gunning directly for Matt. There's a new serial killer who may or may not be connected. And there may be a new romantic interest as well. We'll see.
I like this. I think it's a nice, it's a lot of different things. Like, I feel like so many Daredevil runs start with, like, one different thing or one, like, fucked up thing that happens to him. And this one, it feels like a real new page across the board for Daredevil with, like you're saying, the law school stuff. Just a different vibe. He's talking about feeling old, feeling, like, a little bit just out of touch, which I thought was like, oh, I haven't really heard that from Daredevil. I'm curious what that means. But I want to highlight the art. I feel like we haven't seen Daredevil be a little bit lighter and airier. There's more space between there's just more space that Daredevil is being in, acting in. It felt lighter and in a nice way. And the same, like last week we talked about the new Flash book that Ryan North and Gavin Guidry are doing. And that felt light and sort of like just an easy book to walk into. And this feels the same way to me.
Yeah, I totally agree with you on the art. I want to laud Stephanie Phillips on the writing just because everything felt very precise, dialogue and line-wise, as well as plot-wise. Like, it seems like very simple things, but from having the serial killer taking people's eyes, and Daredevil, of course, is blind, to the way that there are certain lines that play off of specifically Matt and his law and direction. He talks a lot about, like, this is kind of the same thing, but a little bit different, and here's why. And he's put off by all of that. I thought it was an interesting place to put him.
Yeah.
The one thing, and this is actually a good thing, but that stuck out to me, is when he meets his new, definitely not a romantic interest, professor that he works with, who hates him, she lists all of his jobs. And I was like, that is weird. That is weird that he had all of those jobs. That's strange.
You know, just changing up the profesh every now and again.
Yeah. I forgot that he was mayor of New York City, I guess, briefly. So there you go.
Yeah. I don't know if he's looked back. No one bumps into him and says, hey, Mr. Mayor.
Anyway, why don't we move on to the next book, which is Royals number one from Image Comics, written by Derek Kirk Kim, art by Jacob Perez. Derek Kirk Kim is the creator of The Last Mermaid, a great book from Image that came out a while ago. This is not him drawing it, but he is writing it, and it is about two twins who are psychics and use that to cheat on cards in high-stakes poker tournaments. They've gone back to Korea to compete in a tournament. One of them is the devil may care attitude one. The other one is having a little crisis of faith. I think there was the same. So there's a scene of him smoking with a priest. Was it also Daredevil where he's smoking it with a priest? Or there's another book in the stack that had basically the same scene, and it was very eerie to me. Do you remember
smoking
that?
Smoking with a priest? I don't think it was Daredevil, but We'll find it.
We'll loop around to it. Anyway, I thought this was really
good. You're saying it's Smoking with a Priest week on the stack?
It's Smoking with a Priest week. It's always Smoking with a Priest
Smoke
week.
Him if you got him, Father, says Alex.
Really well done characters, interesting situations. Did not go in the direction that I expected by the end of this issue. But good art, good writing. I dug this. What did you think?
I also really enjoyed this. First off, great cover. Very active cover.
Yes, they Love are that. Throwing a card directly at the camera, if you will.
Yes, the Ace of Spades, meaningful. The way that this plays out is so considered and like I feel like you can feel the depth of thought that went into this. I like the way we're eased into sort of the supernatural part of this in a way that makes you feel like, yeah, this is just what's happening. I love that. Very like show, don't tell. And then I like the way the story moves, and I truly have no idea where this is going to go in a good way.
Yes, very excited to follow this book. Next up, another DC Comics book, Bizarro Year None, number one, written by Kevin Smith and Eric Carrasco, art by Nick Patara. Now, interestingly, DC is not putting this in any of the press, and I guess probably I understand why, but back in the day, there was almost a anthology live-action DC show on the DC Universe service produced by Greg Berlanti called Strange Adventures. Mm. And so it was going to focus on, like, weirder characters every single episode. And there was going to be a definitive Bizarro origin story by Kevin Smith and Eric Carrasco, to the point that they talked about it. They talked about some casting. They were really going to try to get Nicolas Cage to play Bizarro in this one episode. That's what they were really going to push for. It never happened. And now we have a comic that eerily has the same plot that they were going to have on the episode, just drawn by Nick Patara. So that's kind of what's going on here. The plot of the book is Jimmy Olsen and Perry White get sucked into Bizarro's world when it is very new. What'd you think, Justin?
I mean, this was cool. The art's great.
Art is great.
Great.
Interesting. Oh, right. No. You just had a interesting pregnant pause right
Well, you know, the art is very cool. And there's a lot of good visuals, especially. And I don't know. Bizarro, though, is a character that I'm like, the more as I'm reading this, I'm like, I don't want to know all this. I don't want all this. It's like, it's enough. We have enough about him. We don't need to explore it further.
I agree with that. And I also think there's a lot of time spent on Jimmy Olsen and Perry White just kind of hanging around the Daily Planet for a while.
There's so much Perry White in this where I was like, what? Why are we?
Yeah.
And he looks like Wolverine, sort of.
Knowing the backstory, and I almost wish I didn't know the backstory, it feels to me like this is the first act before the commercial break. And a lot of it was set up for being like, hey, the viewers aren't necessarily going to know the Daily Planet or Jimmy Olsen on this DC streaming service, I guess, or whatever it is. But it definitely feels like the first chunk of a script to me. And I wish they had just gotten to the Bizarro of it all faster, personally.
So. Yes. I mean, I agree with you. And I bet that what you're saying is absolutely what this is the first, third up to the commercial break or first quarter. But I bet they just started seeing the art come back in and they were like, well, let's do the giant splash pages.
And the giant splash pages are great. There's like a huge toy soldier that's sticking into the Daily Planet building that is super cool. All the stuff on Bizarro World looks really interesting as well. I don't like the design for Bizarro because it creeps me out. Like, it's a good design, but, like, it's a little gross. Like, yeah. He has these little teeth that don't quite match that are creeping me out.
Yeah, I agree with you. I don't like that.
Yeah.
But it has the, like, Nick Patara on this is such a, like, Frank Quitely vibe. 100%. But a little bit, like, it is the bizarre that. It's like the bizarro all-star Superman in a way that I think it was a smart choice, even if we're like, I don't know if we need all this.
Yeah. But I'm curious to check out the second issue anyway, now that we're set up and into the second act post-commercial. Speaking of commercials in Hollywood, Wonder Man, number one from Marvel, written by Jerry Duggan, art by Mark Buckingham. In this issue, Wonder Man is back in Hollywood, but not working as an actor. Instead, he's pretty much an enforcer for the studio, and an old prison buddy of his is in big trouble, though we don't know exactly what kind of trouble, really, until the end of the issue here, though the mystery is just deepening. What'd you think about this one, Justin?
I love Wonder Man. I'm a fan of I like the series that we just reviewed and it just came out. Everyone saw coming back for season two. I don't know if you talked about that. I like the West Coast Avengers character back in that era. Really good. There was a Wonder Man series back in the, I want to say late 90s that I thought was excellent. But Wonder Man's been sort of, it's called out in this issue where he's like, yeah, I had the weird things. I was inside Rogue for a while. That was weird. So it has a little bit of that, like, postmodern story where it's like, it's a little weird. Comics are weird is a little bit of an undertone here. And it feels a little bit like Moon Knight. Some of the run where it's like, oh, okay, we're just dealing with all the continuity choices that have come before as opposed to just getting to a story. But, I mean, I do like the way that his brain is fractured, and I think if they can follow that and sort of redefine this character in the current comics, that would be very cool.
Yeah, a little bit of this book was me redefining my expectations over the course of reading the issue, which I think is an extended issue. Like, there's more pages than usual in this, for sure.
There are.
Mostly because it's nothing like the TV series, which I didn't necessarily expect, but it's like 100% not like that other than starring a character named Wonder Man. This is unfair because Jerry Duggan has done so many other things, but for some reason with this one, I was like, oh, this is going to be his comedy book. Like, he's going to be doing funny stuff with Wonder Man in this book. And there are some jokes in there, but what it actually is it's a Hollywood noir starring Wonder Man. And it really took me a while to, like, get around to that. And once I did, I very much dug the vibe of the book. Like, I like the supporting cast a lot. It's fun having Hellcat in here as the lawman who is tracking him down and, like, pushing his buttons. I like this new guy, this new actor. I thought this was friend of his was cool as well. And tying it back to his prison days, I think is very smart.
Killer Watt being in there was interesting. That seems important. It feels like a 70s noir as well, like a very, like, 70s Hollywood noir. So it's a little glitzy, a little bit like peeling back the pristine front of the story to get to the dirty part underneath.
And I should have looked this up beforehand. I don't know if it's having different people inking and coloring him or not, but Mark Buckingham's art is so different here than it is over the Fantastic Four First Foes specials that he's been doing. It's great. Like, I love seeing Mark Buckingham over the course of 29 pages of a ongoing / miniseries. That's cool.
Well, and Mark Buckingham's art has, I feel like we know him as a little bit more of a classical, like, it has an old school feel to it, which actually rhymes really nicely with the 70s noir of it and the fact that Wonder Man has this, like, broken brain with a bunch of different eras messed up in there. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it's interesting. Now that I am on board, I'm very curious to read the second issue. Why don't we move on and talk about a one-shot, I believe. Kilroy is here, number one, from Image Comics, written by Joe Pruitt, art by Dalibor Telagic. I guess this is maybe a sequel to something, or I'm not quite sure, but it is about a guy who is, I believe, an angel who is fighting a demon. Maybe? Question mark?
A question mark? No, this, I actually liked, this is very, like, it's a very, a lot of throat-clearing characters telling you, they're telling you what's happening in the story. But it's taking a lot of ideas that I think are cool. Like, Kilroy Was Here is an old, like, World War II thing, right? Like, soldiers would write that on stuff. And they so that's just an idea that I think has been taken here. And it's the idea of a character that's being punished to be stuck around innocent people being killed, but unable to act. And so for the first half of the book, the character is being, like, roasted for that being his lot in life. And there's a lot of, like, angels, devils, fallen angels. We must kill these 200. There are 200 fallen angels loose on the earth. And then the Kilroy gets powered up to being like, well, you're the one that gets to kill them now. So it's, like, a good, like, talking about breaking down this being part of a larger story, this is like the cold open of a movie, where now you have your hero juiced up with the flaming sword ready to go out there and just wreck shop.
Yeah, this feels very Top Cow to me. Like, if you like Top Cow stuff, I think maybe you'll like this.
There's a world of opportunity out there, beyond the typical 9-to-5, where purpose and grit come together, where the American spirit and ingenuity are welcomed, in places that could really use your skills and your experience. We're talking about the Peace Corps, with volunteers living and working in communities around the globe. It's been called the toughest job you'll ever love. Tough because it asks so much of you, to dig deeper, get your hands dirty, to go that extra mile, to rise to the occasion, and meet challenges head on. And the love part? Comes from being part of something bigger than yourself, from building bonds that last a lifetime. It's knowing your hard work transformed lives, including your own. After 65 years, the Peace Corps is still the toughest job you'll ever love. Explore opportunities in more than 60 countries. Learn about benefits and apply at peacecorps.gov/serve.
If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill at its lowest price ever and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first and only GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door, no insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Based on advertised cash price for 30-day supply of medication only. Membership required. Fee not included, and billed separately. Weight Loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
Why don't we move on and talk about Absolute Superman, number 18 from DC Comics, written by Jason Aaron, art by Rafa Sandoval. We're getting a new arc here, introducing King Shazam. And this is, I don't think, too much of a spoiler if you know anything about the Absolute Universe. King Shazam is not Billy Batson. It is actually Teth Adam, a.k.a. Black Adam. But there are some big twists and turns in terms of the origin story here. This also gets very much tied in with the ongoing Ra's al Ghul plot, as well as paralleling the birth of King Shazam with Superman himself. Justin, you're the big absolute Superman head on the podcast. What'd you think about this one?
This continues to be sort of the, you know, we talk about the Trinity absolute books, and if the premise of the absolute universe was like, we're going to do a universe that is tinged in darkness, the Omega energy has made the heroes darker and more, there's a brooding nature to them. I think this one is this book is the one that is really bearing that standard. Batman is so like outlandish and big that it feels like it's just beyond that idea, is doing its own full thing. Wonder Woman similarly is a story. It's just like, it's in the mythology, but it's not necessarily like a Diana that is like suffering. She's actually a brighter, shinier Diana, I would argue, than the main continuity one. This Superman, though, in this book is more tortured, and we're getting these much more, his rogues are also that way. And I just really like it. Like the art is such a perfect reflection of it. It just feels darker, it feels more shadowed. At the same time, it's still using the same bright reds and blues that you'd expect.
Yeah, this definitely feels like it is the start of a much more chaotic arc than we've had before, because there are all sorts of other characters going against each other. There's also a surprise debut of an absolute character that I don't think anybody saw coming. I certainly didn't see coming in this issue. So this seems like this is heading towards a battle royale, which is something different. But yeah, like I was intimating earlier, the parallels between Superman and Black Adam I thought were really smartly done. There's actually two debuts. We don't just get, I'll say who they are if people, again, spoiler warning, but Steel shows up in this issue, and also we get Phantom Stranger, which is weird.
But cool, like getting weirder. It's getting like Jason Aaron does such a good job of like putting his pieces out without having it feeling like a labor. It feels like just a drop. I mean, he perfected this on his massive run on Thor, and he's bringing that skill set here while also telling us a story that is really rooted in the core absolute point of view. While at the same time, there's topicality here, like we've talked about before. Like, it's really good.
Deadpool, April Pool's Day, number one from Marvel, written by Gail Simone, art by C.F. Villa, Robert Gill, and Ig Guara. As you can probably tell from the title, this is ostensibly about Deadpool celebrating April Fool's Day, but that's just how it starts. As again, it's attacked by a new old enemy who is trying to bring different genres back to Marvel Comics. There are a ton of properties in here from back of the day that I certainly never read or have completely forgotten, though some folks who are more into much, much older comics, timely comics even, may remember them better. This definitely went in directions I was not expecting, but man, Gail Simone is like on a heater right now, I think, with her books. Like I was saying earlier about some, or Kyle Starks was saying about like some writers think they're funny, but they're not actually funny. Gail Simone is funny, and she knows how to write Deadpool, and this is laugh out loud funny.
Well, and I just really like her Deadpool. It's not so obnoxious. It's more, there's a likability there that I think some people miss with Deadpool and make him just this like manic clown that I'm like, I don't need that energy in my comics. It's too intense. This is someone that I can read. And the other really smart choice here is putting the meta genre stuff, like it's not him turning and talking to us all the time. It's the story. So the meta-ness is within the story without having him to constantly be like, get a load of this shit going on behind me. And that like, it makes for such just a nice read. It's a loving homage to comics as opposed to sort of like undercutting, which is just nice. The humor is built on the positivity and the idea of being like in a romance comic suddenly in your life. And that's really cool.
Yeah, I agree with all of that. This was a really pleasant surprise. Like, I liked everybody on the team, but the kindness that you're calling out was the really big surprise there. It's a really sweet, earnest book. So if you didn't want, like, this is sort of the opposite of Mad About DC, which is just like off the walls bonkers.
Yeah.
If you're looking for another comedy book to pick up on April Fool's Day, this is one that like is very funny, but much more concrete in its story.
Really like Deadpool's relationship with Outlaw. Like, mm-hmm. this is something that, like, I don't know what the name, like, they hook up and then she almost kills him at several points and is like, I can't see you anymore. But I like that just ongoing thing. It feels very true to Deadpool rather than having this, like, big emotional, like, mess that he's dealing with. To be in a relationship with someone that's on again, off again, and just, like, sort of, like, I love you, I fuck. Like, it feels... That, to me, makes more sense with Deadpool, rather than so often it's the other way.
There you go. The Sacrificers, number 20 from Image Comics, written by Rick Remender, art by Andre Lima Araujo. We are really getting down to it here, as Pigeon has been driven back to his sky palace. The people are on the attack, trying to destroy him and his family for destroying their world, leading to a big decision by Pigeon by the end of the issue. Justin, I am shocked that we're getting these issues so quickly. They seem to be coming back to back to back. And there's a new one, which we think is the last one.
It says to be concluded at the end.
Crazy. That's crazy.
Yeah. And I talked about this on the live show. And this issue just really brings those themes home so hard that I was mentioning that, like, the last couple arcs have been about, like, Pigeon and his family being gods, essentially. The thing that Pigeon was there to kill from the very beginning, and just taking down society. And then, but when you become in charge of a society, you become the thing that you hate. And we get to hear his partner, who's dying in her bed, be like, no, you don't need this. Don't worry about this. Just go live a quiet life. I'm gone. I consider me a sacrifice. And I want to die so that I know when it's time to let go so that you may go on. And he's like, fuck that. And I'm just like, ah, dude. Rick Remender does such a great job of making us follow these characters, and then they make a choice that they make a choice that is just wrong. And we get to and have to follow them. When we know the character next to him, who he loves, is telling him the right thing, and he refuses to listen to it. Nobody else writes like that. And that's why his books are just constantly so good. The other thing I love about this book and this story, the last few issues we've gotten, is he lets his characters just age and look at things differently. And characters can change so much, and it feels totally grounded. It's just really good.
Yeah. And I don't know if you said this, sorry if you did, but gorgeous art as well. Just like every single panel on here is absolutely stunning, from big battle scenes to intimate moments. It's just great. Batman number 8 from DC Comics, written by Matt Fraction, art by Ryan Sook. After a very focused last issue, we're now doing sort of like catch up in Gotham City a little bit, back to what I guess you could call the main plot. Vandal Savage is the commissioner of the police force. Poison Ivy has been elected mayor. And while Vandal Savage and Ivy are convening and talking about what to do about the Batman problem, Batman is meeting with Alan Scott Green Lantern, wondering what to do about his Vandal Savage problem. And also, we have a third old man who's wandering around. There you go.
But the third old man, one of the best just scenes of the issue, I thought, was talking to his grandson about like being brave and stuff, as this cop is just fucking with them for no reason. And man, I thought that was great, and just like totally out of nowhere. I wonder where this will go, but like I just thought that was great.
Everything in here is really good. It is such an interesting experience reading this book, because every issue is like, you have to, whatever happened to the previous issue, you have to be like, put that out of your head. Forget about that for a second. It's not that we're coming into clean with the continuity, but Matt Fraction is just trying something entirely different format-wise for the issue every single time out. And that's really cool. It's very unexpected. The continuity-wise, the stuff that we do learn, or what they sort of figure out about Vandal Savage, that is very interesting and redeems a lot of a okay event that happened recently with the Gotham City books, to the point that in this issue, Batman was like, they're talking about the meteorite that fell that gave Vandal Savage his longevity. And Batman's like, I don't know, it exploded, I guess. And I'm like, yep, that's my memory of it too, Batman. So I like all of that stuff. It's funny in between there. And I love the idea, the conversations that Alan Scott and Batman have about why they're having coffee in a coffee shop. So just very nuanced, interesting writing throughout this.
Just great dialogue. This reminds me of why I love the book Starman so much. It has a similar structure where we're following these conversations. There's a plot things happening. There's danger. But there's also just people hanging out talking to each other. Mm-hmm. And it feels like real conversation. I love the Alan Scott Batman conversation that they have. It's very like, we're both superheroes. Batman gets to be funny in a little bit in this book, which is something I've been asking for over a decade. And we're getting it right now. Loving this run.
Captain Marvel, Dark Past, number one from Marvel, written by Paul Jenkins, art by Lucas Wernick. This is a new five-issue, I believe, miniseries where Captain Marvel is having visions of her past, present, and future, including things from her past that she doesn't remember or have not necessarily happened. She is trying to figure out why and how that is happening, teaming up with Iron Man and then Spider-Woman later on in the issue. I was very surprised when I heard about this book because Paul Jenkins came back and they announced another Century series. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Then he did a Captain Marvel series and I'm like, huh, okay, I don't know why he would do that. So I was a little iffy going into this, but I thought this was really excellent. Like, very well-paced story about Captain Marvel. It's very similar, surprisingly. Like, they talk about Rogue a lot of this issue, and it's very like the Rogue miniseries that's going on right now, where she's also like, oh, I'm having all these memories and I don't know where they're coming from. But I like that one, and I also like this one. And add in Lucas Wernick's art, which is just some of the best art that Marvel has going right now, and I was very impressed by this issue.
I wonder if that's intentional or, like, if everyone's aware that Rogue and Captain Marvel are having similar stories happen?
Yeah.
Because it seems it's crazy.
That's it a is crazy a little crazy. I have to imagine it's just a coincidence of publishing schedules, but I don't know.
Maybe but they'll tie together. I agree. I doubt they'll tie together, but it's just very funny that these characters that are tied together personally and, like, can't tell each other's memories apart a little bit. I mean, that's a part of this story. Are having the same mystery happen to them at the same time. So that's cool. I like this. Captain Marvel, I feel like, has been a character lately that's been a little bit lost or a little bit just like one note in a lot of the Avengers stuff where it's like, we just got to be the best heroes we can be. We got to go hard. I'm like, okay, cool. But like, what's some more interesting stuff you might have? And that's what I think the layers that this comic is maybe going to give us. And it's a Jenkins, we're having a Jenkins run right now.
Yeah, a Jenkins essence.
Yeah.
We can workshop that. We can work on that one.
Yeah, we're going to need some Jenk insurance because we got some good stuff happening. Jenk insurance.
Minor Threats, The Last Devil Left Alive, number four from Dark Horse Comics, written by Pat Oswalt and Jordan Bloom, art by Scott Hepburn. We're really getting down to it. There is one more issue of this left, and then that's it for Playtime. Playtime's over, everybody.
Playtime's over. Name that character. Playtime's over.
I don't know. That's very... It sounds very
familiar. Bonesaw from...
Okay, from Spider-Man?
Yeah. Do you think that's where the Playtime character came from?
It might be, actually. I don't know. But here she and her compatriots are fighting back against superhero multiversal gentrification in the biggest, most explicit way possible. We're getting sort of the Ocean's 11 issue here, where we're seeing different parts of the plan play out at the same time. There's a pretty complex story plotting going on in this issue, which comes together really nicely by the end. But I will admit, this is one issue that I was like, "What? There's a lot going on here." And I had a little trouble following all the threads until it started to come together at the end, which might be purposeful.
Yeah, I mean, there's just always so many characters in these books that they're doing. But I really like them. I feel like no other book right now is mixing tones as well as Minor Threats between legit action set pieces and superheroes kicking ass and just straight, like, making fun of stuff comedy that is also happening in this book. It's really good. I love every new hero they introduce. I'm like, I want to know more about this character. We have a character that shoots cassette tapes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Cool. Deadly. Yeah.
As we found out talking about that with Scotty Young, maybe it is Scotty Young.
Maybe those are Scotty Young's old rap cassettes that he's been dying to get out into the world.
Yeah. Yeah, for anybody who didn't listen to the interview, Scotty used to be a rapper back in the day and recorded stuff on cassettes. So we're trying to start a petition on GoFundMe.
I like that you really landed there. Yeah, we're trying to go fund him.
Yeah, we're just trying to send money to Scotty Young. No reason. Yeah. Anyway, release the rap tapes, Scotty. Let's move on to Batman Superman World's Finest number 50 from DC Comics, written by Mark Waid, art by Dan Mora and Adrian Gutierrez. We haven't talked about this title for a while, but with the 50th issue, which is very impressive for a Batman Superman team up book, figured it was worth checking in with it. And there's a lot going on here too. The first story, Batman and Superman go into a dream, and then the backup story, some stuff happens with Jimmy Olsen.
Yeah, man, the first story, the art, this skull guy is really, really good.
Dr. Destiny?
Yeah. I really like this. I mean, it's a Mark Waid book. He's been doing it so well. And this is, honestly, like, when I saw a big 50th anniversary issue, reading it, I was like, oh, it feels like he's just continuing to tell the great story that he wants to tell. And I actually liked that. I feel like, especially in a week when we're getting so many, like, guys, it's April Fool's. It felt like, no, he's just like, this is a big issue, but it's just going to be a big issue of the book that I want to make.
Yeah, and I agree with you. This Dan Mora guy is really good. I wish he was on more books rather than less books, but I guess we'll see. You know, a guy can only draw so many titles at the same time.
Yeah, though he's proving that maybe you can.
Maybe you can do it all. Maybe Dan Mora's can have it all in the big city. The Eternals 50th anniversary special number one from Marvel, written by Ethan S. Parker and Griffin Sheridan, Ralph Macchio, not the Karate Kid, and Patrick Stump, art by Phil Noto and Dale Eaglesham, Michael Cho, and Domenico Carbone. As you can probably tell, we're getting three stories here, paying tribute to Jack Kirby's creations. The first one finds Icarus teaming up with Captain America. There is a second one that I'm blanking on what it's about. And then the third one introduces a lost, forgotten new Eternal to continuity.
Is there a more damaged property in Marvel Comics than the Eternals? Like, no. Is there a thing that
Inhumans,
people are like,
maybe?
Maybe, but I feel like not as many people are mad at the Inhumans. I feel like the Eternals movie has aged horribly.
Yeah.
Who have you rewatched that movie since you saw it?
I have not. The kids are working their way through the MCU, so we're going to get there eventually. But I don't know.
So you're going to sit down with your kids and you're going to be like, this is Eternals.
Enjoy.
And really take it in with them again?
Yeah, I think so. I don't know. I thought like 50% of that movie was all right.
Nice. Which 50% you think?
I don't know. I'd have to watch it.
I dare you to say the beginning, middle, or end. I dare you to say any of those.
Just peppered throughout.
Saying like 2 percentage points throughout the entire
movie? Yeah, like every once in a while I'll be like, that's cool.
Oh, cool. Hey, cool 1%, Brian Tyree Henry.
No, I agree with you, though. But the reason I brought up Inhumans is because I think it was the same sort of Marvel Studios damage that was caused where they were like, we got to pivot into these Inhumans. Everybody's going to love Inhumans. TV shows coming up. No X-Men. Get out of your X-Men. We're all in on humans. And then Inhumans came out and people were like, this is the worst show I've ever seen in my life. I hate this. And they had to be like, sweep the Inhumans under the rug. And every time they show up now, you can't see them in the comics without thinking about that TV show, which sucks. But I do think it's the same thing with the Turtles, because the movie is so universally hated. But I would argue, like, at the same time, Kieran Gillen's run on Eternals was really good and really interesting. But then they tried to shove them in and being like, yep, they're the same level and same sort of thing as Avengers and X-Men with the Axe event. And it just didn't quite work.
No. And, like, I think they should just be weirder. And what this book does a good job of is having them be a little weirder, a little more, like, godlike and sort of concerned with other things. The second story that you were mentioning of Masks and Monsters, where this Eternal is like, I will never be amongst you. I was like, this is the kind of stuff that, like, if they could just, it's only a few pages, but, let that be the book. Go bigger and weirder with it, like they did with the New Gods book that I think started out so strong over at DC and then lost its way a little bit with complicated plot. I think we could do that in the Marvel Universe with the Eternals really well.
I like these stories. I thought the first story was a fun throwback, particularly I really like the Dale Eaglesham art, always a big fan of his, and comparing that to Phil Noto. So that was really good. Just like a nice, solid Captain America meets Icarus story. The last one, the new Eternals powers, I thought were really interesting and cool. Which is hard to do. So I was very pleasantly surprised about that. And I do hope we see that character more in the future. That seemed like a very clear setup for a book. So I don't know. We'll see what happens.
Alex, I don't want to call it out, but we got a the end question mark.
Ooh.
Have you ever seen that before in comics?
No, that's new. That's a new thing.
Because the thing with the end is it usually means, hey guys, this is over, move along.
Yeah, I usually see like a period after that or an exclamation point if we're like excited it's over.
They're like, it's over. Get out of here. But this is more like the end. Mm. Like the end? You know?
You tell me, viewers. Well, I guess we'll see what happens. Touched by a Demon, number 3 from Dark Horse Comics by Kristen Gudsnick. This is about a self-help group that is all demons, and they keep doing an increasingly terrible job with all of their clients. In this one, we get a absolutely hilarious, I thought, riff on the monkey's paw that I've never seen before. And man, I don't know. I cannot get enough of them being like, yeah, we're really helping. And they are not at all. It is bad.
They are not. Bit. It is. I mean, this has like Scott Pilgrim energy, humor to it in a way that, like, if you just want to see a new, you've read your Scott Pilgrim volumes too many times, like, come check this book out because it has that. It has the fun energy just with more straight up evil involved, which I think makes it fun.
Yeah. And another great shirt in this issue. We had a lot of discussion on our comic book club Discord about the Hannibal Montanaball t-shirt from the previous issue, which is very good. Here we get Les Incroyables with Mrs. Incredible with her hair blowing like the Les Miserables poster. Yeah. I told Kristen Gunstock she is going to be on our show in a couple of weeks that she needs to make the Hannibal Montanaball t-shirt because there's a demand of one or two people in our Discord. And that's really going to be like bring in the money. So we'll see if she makes the Lays in Crayola's t-shirt as well, because I'd buy one. Poison Ivy, 43 from DC Comics, written by G. Willow Wilson, not Rainbow Rowell, art by Jamie Infante. That's on me. I'm an idiot.
Really calling yourself out.
When I make a mistake, I own it, you know? In this issue, as we mentioned with Batman, Ivy is the mayor of Gotham City. She is trying to find out more about what is going on in the city. And specifically, she is talking to a rich guy who runs the plumbing in the sewers and takes him into the sewers for a little tour of her own. Catwoman also stops by, and there's a couple of other ongoing things that happen, as well as we find out why Harley and Ivy broke up. Another great issue of this book.
I know, it's crazy. I'm flipping through it again, and I'm just trying to think what to say. I mean, I do think, maybe this is just me making it up, but it does feel like the art has gotten a little more austere and this mayoral arc, and that feels purposeful. That's really cool. But in general, I feel like this book just continues to be awesome. Great character. All the characters are great, and they're given their space and time. This Harley backstory stuff is really cool. I don't know. And I'm very tied up in just Poison Ivy's relationships in a way that I did not expect to be at this point in my life.
Yeah, it's really well done. I love the supporting cast going on here. I love how G. Willow Wilson allows her to be a real anti-hero, like the hero and the villain at the same time, because what she's doing is bad, and we know this is going to go wrong. Like, she is the mayor of Gotham City, the worst city on the face of the planet, but everything she's doing is like, you're not going to be the mayor for very long here. I'm sorry.
Yeah, this feels fake. But also, like, let me just read the last page, the top two pieces of text. This is in Gotham. There he was, the hill, the most turnip-brained of the Parliament of Trees. That's crazy.
But it is crazy.
Good. Like, but it works. Still good. Yeah, it's really. Yeah.
All right, why don't we last but not least talk about Alien King Killer number one from Marvel, written by Saladin Ahmed, art by Carlos Nieto. This takes place on a planet that is infested by xenomorphs, but run by three kings, not of the Jesus variety, but of the roided out, genetically modified variety, and a mysterious man who wants to kill them. Not a lot of xenomorphs in this book, in this Alien book.
I mean, they're more, well, I was like, this was very different than I expected. It's so much of the Marvel Alien stuff has been very much like, hey, we're sort of doing the movie style story where it's like a bunch of people and then xenomorphs and then a bunch of the people die and somebody lives. And they, it's not to say they have been bad. I've liked, especially the first one was excellent with the ice planet and all of that, where the xenomorphs were frozen underneath and emerged. I thought that was really cool. This is just a totally different type of story from anything. It's like post-apocalyptic planet where everyone's dead, people trying to get by. The xenomorphs are more just like the natural element that is killing people, and it's about the power structure and who got to be where in this. So, like, it's a fresh idea. You know, we're all still getting the elements we know. There's a character named Mouse, which I think is an alien thing.
Yeah.
So Mouse. That was
Newt. Are you thinking of Newt?
Maybe. Yeah. Hmm. Feels like it's in that lineage. But I liked the action. I liked the way that when Mouse met the warrior who rips through the xenomorph pretty effectively. I like that, and I liked the way they sort of helped each other out in an unexpected way. It's funny to see xenomorphs that are like red shirts, like, oh, that was just a shitty xenomorph, when so much of Alien is like, oh no, xenomorphs are scary, and it's building up to the mama that is the most scary. And this is just like, no, they're just regular.
That's what I was responding to, is that, like, they seem like very much a side thing going on when they're always kind of the main thing. Even in Alien Earth, where it's like, and there's five other aliens, it was like, but really the xenomorph. Like, that is the baddest one, I'm sorry. And here, it's like, I don't know, it's more of a fantasy structure that's going on here. That's what they're going for. So I think need to get used to it. It's not what I'm used to with my Alien books, but like you said, art's good. The story's interesting. It's definitely very different. And that is it for the stack. If you'd like to support this podcast on the podcast, we do patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to YouTube. Come hang out. We would love to chat with you about comic books, Apple, Spotify, Android, or the app of your choice. To subscribe, listen, and follow the show, comicbookclublive.com. For this podcast and many more, until next time, we'll see you at the Comic Book Club.
We'll see you on the Bizarro Planet. I'm Bizarro Alex.
Me am Bizarro Justin.
Comic Book Club. gentlemen.